Ormley was discontinued. You know, they shut down Ormley, the bar in the house, and it looked like the club was going to come to an end. But we did a deal with UKAEA, and they allowed us to convert the builder, the BWD, Building Works Department cottage, just behind the hostel, and that became the club. A facility of slightly bigger than the old the rooms in the house, the old house. But we were in there for a few years, and then I can't remember the reasons, but we were sort of more or less told that we would have to vacate or we could buy. So at that time I was vice chairman, and I negotiated with Roger James. You remember Roger James? Was it Roger? Yes. And we bought the club. Now I can't remember the exact price, James, but I know the original offer was about 30,000, and we couldn't afford that. So we went back, and I think in the end we bought it for about between 15 and 20. I can't remember the exact number, but it was 16 sticks in my head. But yeah. I was trying to remember that for this, but I can't remember. But it was around about that, £16,000.
Yeah. So you obviously had quite a thriving club then.
Yeah. Well, we managed to register ourselves as a charity. I didn't quite know how we did that. But I remember also getting into negotiations with the council, Wick Council, because they wanted to cease that charitable status. But I managed to persuade them that we should retain it. And that was quite important because it meant you didn't pay rates. Mm-hmm. And the grounds on which we retained the charitable status was that if it hadn't been, I argue that if it hadn't been for the club in Ormley, many people would not have stayed. You know, there was anecdotal and I think some factual evidence of people coming up on the train, getting off the train, taking one look at the place and getting the next train home. Or certainly people that are only here for days and weeks rather than any length of time because they didn't like it. But the hostel, the club, sort of gave them a chance to make friends and meet people. And also, one of the things we were under our charter, required to do was to provide sporting and other facilities that you couldn't get elsewhere. So we had the Camera Club, which is thriving to this day, was an Ormley Lodge subsection. We had Scottish Country Dancing. I think that's still going today. Well, it was certainly until the shutting down of the Janet Street, they used to go in there. But that too was started by Ormley Lodge Club members. The cricket, and there was other ones as well. But those subsections were another reason I argue that we should retain charitable status, because those were started from Ormley Lodge Club, and they were being maintained by the club and supported by the club. So whether they are still to this day, I don't know.
The club's still in existence, isn't it?
It's still in existence, yeah. The others, yeah. I mean,
So was it at its peak then in the 70s and 80s when you were there? I mean, how many people were members?
Well, I know that it would have been a hell of a thing if every member... a member was allowed to take two guests, and we had 300 members. So if every member turned up with two guests, there was no way you could even stand within the club. Yeah. The difference, I think, with like Janet Street is sadly recently closed, is that there was a real core of those members that used it regularly. And of course, whilst the hostel was open, you had a captive audience to some extent. So you always had people going in and out of the club, and we always had two or three bar staff in those days. Yeah, that was the peak. Mm. It is still going, and it's still quite well supported, and they brought in all sorts of other subsections to encourage. They have a ladies section and other sections too to keep the thing going. So, and the other clubs who were the competitors in that day, which was Viewfirth and Janet Street, have gone, of course.
Yes, that's right, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, you mentioned Viewfirth. Were you a Viewfirth fan? Did you go there a lot?
I didn't go there a lot. I went quite a lot, I suppose, because I went pretty much every weekend, at least one, if not two nights. And the thing with Viewfirth, of course, was that it was able to have dances, so you could meet members of the opposite sex. and it had four snooker tables. So it was capable of having many more people, of course. And it also opened later, because in those days, as I say, when I first went into Ormley, it was 10 o'clock every night. That was closing time. Eventually, that was relaxed, and on a weekend, it would open till 11. Never on a Sunday, because Monday was a work day, so you know, you always had to be cognizant. I was on the committee for many years. You had to be cognizant of the fact that there was 100 and odd people in the place who were doonray workers, so you couldn't have people going off slamming doors at 1 o'clock or 12 o'clock at night. So it was always strict on a Sunday, but we did have later opening later on, and on a Friday and a Saturday.
Yeah. So was there a sort of rivalry between the Ormley Club and Viewfirth, or not really?
Yeah, I think there was. Not a hostile rivalry, but I think Viewfirth members didn't like it very much that they couldn't get into Ormley, because the Ormley membership was more restrictive. You could be a member of Viewfirth as long as you worked at Doonray in those early days. So Ormley residents could be members of both, because they could resident in Ormley and they were working at Doonray. But it didn't work the other way. There was never any hostility that I can recall. Just as, comments would be made occasionally.
Yeah. Of course, the thing about Viewfirth is that the local people could be associate members, and they could go in as well.
Yes, they could. Yeah.
So that boosted the numbers, obviously.
That's right. Yeah. And then that there was eventually for Ormley, especially when the hostel closed. We had to find some clever ways to try and get the constitution expanded to allow others entry. And I remember when Viewfirth closed, we put an amendment into the constitution to say that any Viewfirth member could become a member of Ormley. And that was quite handy to boost the membership.
Of course, Viewfirth was very, very popular. I believe they used to queue down the street to get in for some of the dances.
All right, I don't recall that, but
and they had their folk festival as well.
Well, that's right. I'd forgotten about that. Yeah, that was at one time. That was said to be second only to Cambridge.
Yeah.
In terms of folk festivals, I mean, the festivals were not the huge thing they are now. Mm. The whole of Viewfirth Green will be covered with people sitting and listening to the music. And
it's a big green.
Yeah, it is a big green. Yeah. Yeah.
Was there any famous faces and names? Can you remember?
Conley, of course. Billy Conley. He came in the early 70s. And there was another chap too. His mate. They were called the Humble Bums, I think. Mm. And what was his name? Bellamy, was it? Anyway, yes, there was quite a few. Famous, certainly from the Scottish folk scene. Quite a few.
Yeah, because the BBC used to go up and record it as well, I believe.
I certainly recall them doing it once. Now, I mean, Viewfirth had a folk club, which was quite a well-known folk club, and we had again Billy Conley came to that, and that was within the club every Thursday night.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was quite well known, quite well supported.
Yeah. Good, John. Organisations. You mentioned cricket. Were you an Ormley Lodge club, as it were? You were quite high up in that. Anything else were you involved in, John?
Not in those days. In the 80s I became a member of the Players, and I was in the Thurso Choral Society, and eventually when that shut down, I became a member of the Whip Choral Society, of which I'm still a member. And I'm still a member of the Players, although they don't offer me leading male roles anymore, I'm afraid.
Because you know, the Players got a big boost, I think, when Dinry came, with extra members, etc.
That's a very good. I think the Players were in existence before Dunray, but not very long. I mean, I think maybe early 50s or late 40s. I think they started, and there may have been. They weren't known as Thurso Players, but there was a theatrical society in Thurso which used to use the top floor of the Drill Hall in
Sinclair Street.
Sinclair Street. Yeah. That's right. That was there. In the stage. I think you can still see the stage is still there, and in fact until recently, and maybe even still, Thurso Players store quite a lot of their big sets that they think they may want to use, at least they store them there. But yes, I guess Thurso Players, I would argue their heyday was the 80s, and we put on some super, but I mean, My Fair Lady was put on in, I think, 1988 or 9, and that was a terrific show, really good. I mean, almost professional, very high standard, and we just had some very good performers and very good set makers, of which they still have, by the way, very good set makers and very good costume designers, but they just seem to all come together at the right time. Mm. And
did you win the British Championship or something like that?
Yeah, that was one. I can't say that I was a member of any of the winning teams, but yes, it was won in the 90s. Then Wick had their heyday. They had a period where they had some really super actors, and they won the British Championship 2 or 3 times. And now it seems to have swung back a bit now to Thurso again. Wick aren't quite so strong, but it's just if you manage to get some really good performers at the same time, that's the difference.
Yeah. I mean, one of the main issues, I think, or the worries in the early days was social integration, and would there would be a them and us thing.
Yes.
Did you ever come across that? Worked, I think.
I did a bit. I think the Atomics, you know, that was the affixed to us, to people who lived in the hostel and people who lived up on the two estates, more particularly the Pennon estate probably than the other side of the river. But so we had that, and there was a bit sometimes some tension, as I've suggested before, in some of the pubs in the town. But I cannot recall, and I was on the social scene quite a lot in the 70s and 80s. I can never recall anybody getting in any sort of flashpoint situation with anybody in Thurso. It was always pretty friendly. I mean, there was places you probably wouldn't go to, but generally, I never had any trouble whatsoever. And I've heard people do, overemphasize that and exaggerate it. But because I never had any trouble. But I do, you know, I do recall one of my friends at the time, a Welshman, who seemed every weekend he went out, he got into trouble. But he was just, I think, one of those unlucky people that always seemed to be in the wrong place at the wrong time.
It
didn't happen to me.
Yeah, because there was that many sports clubs and organisations created because of the Dunray people coming in, and the locals joined in as well. I mean, you name a sport and there's a club for it, really, isn't there? It's just incredible.
That's one thing that Dunray brought with it, for sure, yeah. I mean, we came in with a lot of people who were a long way from home and who wanted to socialise and who wanted to bring their, you know, everything from chess to acting on stage to music. The classical music scene in Thurso particularly is very, very well supported, or was, less so now perhaps, but during that early period in the 60s and 70s, all sorts of little clubs of people getting together and listening to classical music, and and almost anything else you can think of, there was a club for it. And chess was very strong, of course, and there was other card, bridge, there was thriving bridge.
That's still on the go.
Still on the go, A lot of these things were started off. They're a lot quieter now. They used to be reported more extensively in the papers, too, but they're less so now. I mean, football dominates. Yeah. But the Greens, I mean, Caithness rugby is astonishing at the standard they play and the division they're playing in. You know, they're not far off the very top. It's amazing, really, for a small community.
Yeah, because there used to be a Dinry rugby club.
Did there?
Yes, I believe so. Okay. Yeah, as well as a Caithness one.
Yeah, that's probably one of my biggest regrets. I was asked if I wanted to play rugby, and I declined because I was involved in the cricket and that, but I could have done it, and I wish I had. I wish I'd got involved in that. Alan Simonite was a particular friend of mine, and he was scrum half, and he asked me to come along, but I didn't do that. I wish I had. I played football too. I played football for Olney Lodge Club. Sorry, for the hostel. We had a team in the second division, and I remember we Leibster were the team you didn't want to play unless the guys who were in the team who were fishermen were away at sea, because then you could beat them. But if they were all here, they would absolutely thrash you. And one of their guys went on to play for Hibs.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Was that the chap Larnach, was it, I think?
No, no. It's Mackay, I think his name was.
Right.
Yeah, this is in the 70s again. Yeah, so, and I was surprised when I came here, because I played football down south. I mean, not in any sort of big league or anything. In fact, I played in the pub league, which was quite strong, though, because in those days the players who played in the big teams in the county were allowed to play pub football. I mean, that would never be allowed now. But so I was surprised at the standard when I came up here, you know, for a county which with a population that would be a small town even in Dorset, to have the standard of football they had. Well, I was quite surprised. Pleasantly surprised.
I mean, social life, was there a sort of Dunry circle and a Caithness circle for parties and stuff like that, or did they all come together?
I think it's true to say, I mean, I spent 20 more than 20 years in Thurso. I came to Thurso in 30 years. And I think it's fair to say that most of that time, socially, I mixed with Dunray people. It's only sort of latterly that I started to mix wider with as you would say, Caithness folk. When I met Sheila, for instance, and started to meet people from Holkirk. I think that's just the way it was. And I don't think there was any snobbishness in that. It's just you socialise with the people that you meet and know, don't you? It's just a fact.
Yeah.